ओम ज्ञानच निरंधस्य ज्ञानंजन शलाकाय चक्षुरु मीलितं येन तस्मै श्री गुरवे नमः। प्रतिक्रिया न यस्येह कुतश्चित् काहिचित् प्रभो स एषा भगवान् काल सर्वेषं न समागतः। This frightful situation cannot be remedied by any person in this material world. My Lord, it is the Supreme Personality of Godhead as eternal time, Kala, that has approached us all. Purport, there is no superior power which can check the cruel hands of death. No one wants to die, however acute the source of bodily sufferings may be. Even in the days of so-called scientific advancement of knowledge, there is no remedial measure, either for old age or for death. Old age is the notice of the arrival of death served by cruel time, and no one can refuse to accept either summon calls or the supreme judgment of eternal time. This is explained before Dhritarashtra, because he might ask Vidura to find out some remedial measure for the imminent fearful situation, as he had ordered many times before. Before ordering, however, Vidura informed Dhritarashtra that there was no remedial measure by anyone or from any source in this material world. And because there is no such thing in the material world, death is identical with the Supreme Personality of Godhead, as it is said by the Lord Himself in the Bhagavad Gita, chapter 10, text 34, which is not cited here, but it is Mrityu Sarvaharaschaham. Death cannot be checked by anyone or from any source within this material world. Hiranyakashipu wanted to be immortal and underwent a severe type of penance by which the whole universe trembled, and Brahma himself approached him to dissuade Hiranyakashipu from such a severe type of penance. Hiranyakashipu asked Brahma to award him the blessings of immortality, but Brahma said that he himself was subject to death, even in the topmost planet, so how could he award him the benediction of immortality? So there is death even in the topmost planet of this universe, and what to speak of other planets which are far, far inferior in quality to Brahma Loka, the residing planet of Brahma. Wherever there is the influence of eternal time, there is this set of tribulations, namely birth, disease, old age and death, and all of them are invincible. Before reciting, or before speaking on Bhagavatam, I'd just like to bring to your attention that Srimad Bhagavatam, being non-different from Krishna, should be kept better than this. It should have been covered previously, so it doesn't get into such a condition like this. Sorry to see. So please, even though you can buy a book, a new one, but we shouldn't treat the Bhagavatam like a newspaper, which you can just throw, get a new one. Understand that this is the literary appearance of the Personality of Godhead. The subject under discussion is Vidura's speaking to Dhritarashtra. Vidura, throughout his life, often spoke strongly to Dhritarashtra. Even Vidura, when Duryodhana was born, Vidura recommended infanticide. He said that this child should be killed. You'll destroy your whole family. And later on, also, several times, Vidura told Dhritarashtra to reject Duryodhana. So, Vidura, Dhritarashtra was used to receiving very strong and unpleasant advice from Vidura. Throughout all his life, he had been willing to hear that, if not willing to act on it. Dhritarashtra had not rejected Vidura because of Vidura's unpleasant advice. So now again, after the death of Duryodhana, in which all that Vidura had been warning Dhritarashtra of throughout his life, throughout both of their lives, they're more or less the same age. Had come to pass. Vidura had warned Dhritarashtra that this child of yours will destroy, you'll be the cause of the destruction of your whole family. So that had actually happened. Now, Vidura is warning Dhritarashtra about an even more frightful situation. Dhritarashtra's own death. Death of others, especially loved ones, is unpleasant. Of course, some people, they take pleasure in the death of others. But for almost everyone, the prospect of death is horrible. The idea that we have to die. The problem with it is that it's not just an idea, it's a fact. And it's unavoidable. It's unavoidable and unpleasant, and therefore people in general don't want to think about it, or they like to think of it in a vague, removed way, just like they may take a life insurance policy. So that means they're thinking about death. But if they were really serious about thinking about death, they'd think about a lot of other things too. Just like, why? Why is there death? Why should there be death? Why should we have to suffer death? What happens after death? Now some people, many people, accept an answer of what happens after death, but a stupid answer. Many people accept that if you simply place blind faith in what someone tells you, then you will be saved. Otherwise you will burn in hell forever. So this is a simplistic solution, or supposed to be solution, to the problem of death. It also circumvents the problem of having to think very deeply about anything, or to try to understand what the actual situation is. It should be that people should think. People should think that people, the millions of people who profess to believe that after death they will be saved because they believe in some particular doctrine which someone dreamed of, and that others who don't believe it will burn in hell forever. It should be that people should be more intelligent than to just accept that. We find people who are very intelligent in some ways. They write doctoral theses on various theological issues, but the basic absurdity of it, of their whole doctrine, never seems to strike them. That God, according to them, God creates living beings, and those humans who don't believe in what he wants you to believe in, he sends to burn in hell forever. And if confronted with the absurdity of this, they say, well, you can't question God. It's just the way it is. But it's not really questioning God, it's questioning someone's interpretation of God or understanding of God. Is there not a better understanding than this? There is, indeed, a better understanding of God than simply to say, well, we can't understand. He just tells us to believe in him or burn forever, and we can't understand. So you just have to accept it. Accept it or burn. So Srimad Bhagavatam, which is Krishna himself in literary form, presents a better understanding of God. Of course, we cannot understand fully about him. His knowledge and his intelligence is far superior to ours. But to some extent we can understand. So Vidura is enlightening Dhritarashtra, so that Dhritarashtra can understand, if not the nature of God, at least the nature of the frightful situation that he, Dhritarashtra, is in. Dhritarashtra superficially accepted Krishna as the Supreme Personality of Godhead. He accepted it philosophically. But because he was attached to his demonic sons, headed by Duryodhana, he made offense to the Pandavas, who are the dear devotees of Krishna, because Duryodhana was offense personified. As a result of that offense, Dhritarashtra, even though in his better moments, Dhritarashtra had a good philosophical understanding of the nature of this world and of Krishna being the Supreme Personality of Godhead. Despite his philosophical understanding, Dhritarashtra, due to bad association, was offensive, and therefore, even though at the end of life, as we shall see in the upcoming verses, Dhritarashtra left home for the sake of spiritual realization, he could not attain Krishna, but he only attained Brahman realization, which is also Krishna in one sense. Because the Supreme Personality of Godhead is one. It's not that Brahman, Paramatma and Bhagavan are different, but they are different levels of realization of the same Advaya Gyan, which means undivided reality. Vedanti tattada vidas tattam yaj jnanam advayam brahmeti paramatmeti bhagavaniti shabdhyate. That one undivided, indivisible, supreme reality is variously perceived as impersonal Brahman, as Paramatma, and as Bhagavan by persons on different levels of realization. So, the beginning of spiritual consciousness is being presented to Viduri, to Dhritarashtra by Viduri. The beginning of spiritual consciousness is appropriate fear, we can say. Fear is the very nature of this material world. It is the world of fear. Bhayam dutiya niveshatasya nishadapetasya vipayo smritihi. The very nature of this world is fear. When we turn away from Krishna, we become absorbed in Krishna's external energy, which is fear-producing. So So everyone in this world is afraid. Appropriate fear is to be afraid of remaining in this condition and thus not making the endeavor to get out of it. That's good kind of fear. Devotees are known as fearless because they take shelter of Krishna. But they should maintain fear of Maya. If we're not afraid of Maya, then we're in Maya. If we think that we have conquered over Maya, then we are conquered by Maya. Because we cannot conquer over Maya. We cannot conquer over anything. We're very tiny little beings. But taking shelter of Krishna, Krishna can carry us beyond the influence of Maya. But if we think, I have conquered Maya, then that is an illusion, because Maya is illusion, and she's much more powerful than the bonded jiva. So, Maya manifests as misery, illusion. Maya means illusion, or that which is not. So there are different kinds of what is illusion? Non-reality. There are different kinds of non-reality. One kind of non-reality is that which appears to be real, but which is not. And the example is given of a dream or of some magic trick. We think that we're experiencing something, but it has no factual existence. And this whole material world is like that. Whole material existence is like that. During the dream, it seems real. When we wake up, we understand there's nothing actually there. It's just a product of my mind. So, although it seems real, in one sense it can be said to be real because the experience of a dream is real. But because it's temporary and has no factual substance, therefore we say, or it's understood to be not actually real. In one sense, only in a very flimsy sense can a dream said to be real. So in the same way, the whole of everything we see during this life, although it appears to be real, but because it's temporary, it has no substantial existence. The difference between a dream and the waking state is that in the waking there's enough of reality, or enough of reality can come through, the spiritual sound can come through and direct us to be Krishna conscious and awake from this dream. Maybe you've had the experience of, in a dream, dreaming that you've woken up from a dream. Has anyone ever had that experience? Anyone? I've had that. I wake up from a dream and think, wait a minute, am I really awake or am I still dreaming? No, I think I'm still dreaming. So it can be very tricky. Someone may think, now I'm liberated, now I've woken up, but actually you're still asleep. Maybe you woke up from one kind of illusion, but you just transported into another kind of illusion. So that's one kind of non-reality, to perceive everything in this material world as being substantially real. My body, my relatives, everything around me. Whereas it has no actual relationship with who we actually are. Now another kind of non-reality is really another level of non-reality is that which is not even imaginable, just like the horns of a rabbit. Or, in Bengali it is said, Ghore Dim, horse's eggs. Or, one that I came across when one devotee, I asked who he got the pineapple from, he said he got it from the person next door, gave it to us, it's growing on his tree. So pineapple trees is another kind of imagination. For those of you who know, which you don't because you live in cities, and think pineapples come from the stall in the bazaar. So you may think there's a pineapple tree, but there's no such thing as a pineapple tree. They grow from on the ground, plants that grow on the ground. So these are impossibilities, or just something you might see it in a dream. You might see a pineapple tree in a dream. Or you might see a rabbit's horns in a dream. Or you might in a dream see a horse laying eggs. But it has no substantial reality. So, Vidur is awakening Dhritarashtra. And Dhritarashtra this time is... Dhritarashtra is philosophically astute, but due to his strong material attachments, he acted in the wrong way. And he would say, he would openly tell Vidur, or whoever is advising him, Krishna, that yes, I know what I'm doing is wrong, but I'm just so attached to my son that I can't help it. Well, Duryodhana is not there anymore. And Dhritarashtra is also undergoing the experience of old age at this point. Now, in the previous verse, Vidur has addressed Dhritarashtra as king, Rajan. And in this verse, Vidur addressed Dhritarashtra as Prabhu. And that was the illusion that Dhritarashtra was in, that he is the king, he's very powerful, although it really, even from the real point of view, or political point of view, Dhritarashtra really wasn't powerful. And everyone offered him respect and called him the king, but the actual power lay with Duryodhana. And Duryodhana would not have thought, if Dhritarashtra had opposed him, Duryodhana would have just killed Dhritarashtra or stuck him in prison like Shah Jahan. So Dhritarashtra had this illusion that I am the king. And he had a very strong body, which people who have very strong bodies, generally people, men, they want to have a very strong body, especially demoniac people. They desire very strong, people go to the gymnasiums to get a very strong body. And then they like to show it off. Like this, a strong body. So Dhritarashtra had a very strong body, so strong that even in old age he was capable of crushing Bhim after the battle. He wanted to embrace Bhim and kill him by doing so. So even in old age he was so strong. But his strength was diminishing. In old age, strength diminishes. Practically from the age of... I experienced that practically from the age of 30, that bodily energy starts to decline. And then just the beginning of wrinkles, so you can understand that old age is beginning now. And as you get older, then it has a geometric effect. with each year, the aging process runs quicker, so that sometimes in 5 years, someone who looked still quite healthy and strong at 60 and at 65, they look like a wreck. Recently in Bangladesh, I saw some people who I hadn't seen for 30 years. And I remember them as they were, youthful. Now they're old, so I must be like that. My body must be like that also. So, for a thoughtful person, old age is a sign that kala, time, is approaching. Here in this verse, Vidur is telling Dhritarashtra that this frightful situation, old age, it means that Krishna has approached us. So, those who are devotees, they want to be close to Krishna. Krishna approaches everyone, but for non-devotees, in a not very congenial form, Mrityu Sarvaharaschaham. In the form of death, he takes everything away. Dhritarashtra was such a person who, at least he's remembered after death. That saying is there, Kirte Yasya Sajivati. One who has Kirti, one who has is famous as a good person. He continues to live by his name even after death. And it could be said also, Akirti, Yasya Sajivati. One who is infamous. Just like Duryodhan, his name, Ashvatthama. They're still known even now, Hiranyakashipu, but not for good acts, but for bad acts. But for most people, even their name won't be remembered very long after their death. What to speak of everything they have is taken away, and even they may think after death I'll be remembered. But that is also forgotten. It must be in Mysore also. In Calcutta, there's so many street names of people who no one knows. Maybe in the history department in the university, people know who they were. There's the statue of Ashutosh Mukherjee. You've all heard of Ashutosh Mukherjee? There's a statue of him in Calcutta, whoever he may be, which 364 days a year the crows pass stool on it, and then once a year they come with the same brush, they sweep the streets with and sweep it all clean like this. So there are so many. Just recently I was in Mangalore, and so I asked them, who was the last king of Mangalore? And it must have been the king that no one could even say his name. When he was alive, he must have been a very important person. Now no one even knows his name. So, old age is the sign that death is coming. And it's actually Krishna's mercy, for those who are intelligent enough to understand it, that the body is declining in all respects. There's so many parts of the body, and they're all capable of going wrong. And even if one of them goes wrong, it causes so much trouble, so much inconvenience and pain. Even in this fingernail, if it becomes ingrowing, little fingernail can cause so much pain. Even the tooth, how much pain you can get from one little tooth. So like that, everything in the body, we're not even aware of it. But so many things, just everything can go wrong. And it all causes pain. But for those who are Krishna conscious, they know that this is Krishna's warning that we have to leave soon. Don't be attached to the body. Think where are you going to go next? And prepare ourselves for death so that this death can be our last death. Don't get born again. So many times people bring me their children and say, it's the child's birthday. So I usually say something nasty like, so how many years have you died now? How many years dead are you? Because actually it's a fact. Every day that we live means every moment we live, it means we're dying. Every moment gone means it's gone. We're one moment closer to death. So people think a birthday is a celebration, but actually having come in this material world at all, it's not a matter for celebration. It's something that we should be sorry that we left Krishna. So this, it may seem like a very nasty outlook, very cruel outlook. But the fact is, as Srila Prabhupada comments in the first line of this purport, there is no superior power which can check the cruel hands of death. It's just a fact that life in this material world is punctuated by birth, death, old age and disease. Unavoidable. And to try to make a nice situation within this material world is foolishness. To think that we can be happy in this material world, or to think that I am superior because I have more money or a university degree or something, I have more money than you, means you are being beaten by an iron rod and I am being beaten by a golden rod. So I am superior to you, but we're all beaten by birth, death, old age and disease. And these are very, very serious problems. This evening I have to speak about problems. The problems are much worse than people think they are. We think, if we could just solve the pollution problem, then we could live happily, maybe. But you can breathe fresh air, you go on breathing, 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 and then there comes the last breath. And what's after that? That's the real problem. So Vidur is advising Dhritarashtra. Dhritarashtra, you have been a monumental fool throughout your whole life. Monumental is, it's obviously it's an English word, it's an adjective, which means great. He's been a great fool throughout his life. Monumental is derived from the noun monument. So Dhritarashtra throughout his whole life has been like a monument. He's just like a symbol of something great, but he's actually, there's nothing there. He's not actually great. Only in his own mind he thinks he's very great. But actually, he's been a fool all his life because he never took good advice. He had the opportunity to directly associate with Krishna. He was being personally advised by one of the greatest devotees in the whole universe, one of the Dwadash Mahajan. But he preferred to remain attached, saying, well, I have attachment for my son. Even though his son was evil personified, his son had no affection for his father. His son was just utilizing or manipulating his partner, but still out of foolish attachment, Dhritarashtra did the wrong thing. Janiya Shunya Bisha Kainu. Even knowing what was right, he did the wrong thing. So, what do we learn from this? Well, we could all be in the same situation as Dhritarashtra if we're not careful. That we're all fortunate enough here to be getting direction from Srimad Bhagavatam, from Srila Prabhupada. But we see that there are many who are Janiya Shunya Bisha Kainu. They take the instruction, they hear it, they act on it, but after some time they become subservient to material desires. And they act according to their material desires, even though getting good advice. They know what is right, they know what is wrong, but still they do what is wrong. So what's the solution? How do we come out of this? Material desires are very strong, there's no doubt. So how can we overcome them and do the right thing? Well, there could be several answers to that. One is to keep good association. Without good association, we're in trouble. We have the association of Srila Prabhupada in his books. But that also, unless we associate with people who are living as Srila Prabhupada wanted us to live and committed to the principles that Srila Prabhupada taught, then even though we read Srila Prabhupada's books, we may come up with something completely different. Just like we see here in Mysore, an offshoot from Bangalore, of people who read Srila Prabhupada's books and who are committed to offending the followers of Srila Prabhupada. And from the beginning they're trained to think that their guru, who doesn't call himself a guru, is the only one who properly understands Srila Prabhupada. So there are many, you could say that's natural within this material world. There are many interpretations of Srila Prabhupada. Srila Prabhupada exhaustively explained the science of Krishna within his books. Does anyone need the light? No need to burn the light. Unless you want to, is it required to have that light on? Why have it on unnecessarily? Srila Prabhupada has exhaustively explained Bhagavad Tattva Vigyan on the science of Krishna consciousness. But we see there are many interpretations of that or different, approaches that people take to that, so we cannot. There are those who say, well, you just read the books of Prabhupada and that's it. But we factually see how, according to different kinds of association one takes, people have different understanding of what is in the books. So essential to have good association if we are to cross over Maya. Dulabha manava janama shatshange tarha e bhavashindhuri. Always it is emphasized that association, good association is required. Even in the, when Chaitanya Mahaprabhu stated the five most important elements in bhakti, The first one mentioned is Sadhu Sangha. Sadhu Sangha, Nama Kirtan. The second is Nama Kirtan. Third is, anyone? Sadhu Sangha, Nama Kirtan, Bhagavad Shravan, Mathura Vas Sri Murtir Shraddhai Seva. The first is mentioned, Sadhu Sangha. Elsewhere, the Jagannanda Pandit, an associate of Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, has said, Asadhu Sange Bhai Krishna Nam Nahi Hoy, Krishna Nam Bahire Bhatte Tabu Nam Kabu Nahi Noy. He says that in the association of non-sadhus, or those who are not proper devotees, Krishna, the name of Krishna, who is Krishna, does not manifest. That this syllable, Krishna, may be pronounced, but Krishna does not manifest himself or reveal himself to those who are not devotees. So keeping good association is essential. But then we may say, well, how can I know what is good association? It may be difficult to understand what is good association. Because there may be many people who appear to be saintly and who may be saintly in some ways, but who will not help us to become fully Krishna conscious. One example I sometimes cite is that of the previous Kanchi Shankaracharya, the Chandrasekhar Indra, who in Kanchi in Tamil Nadu, who in almost all respects was the ideal sadhu. He was undoubtedly very serious about spiritual life, and about preserving the traditions. He was very learned and detached from this world, and he's, you could say, the ideal sadhu. There's one problem, there's a major problem, is that he's not a devotee of Krishna, he's a Mayavadi. And although he liked devotees, and he was inclined in many ways towards bhakti, but even though he had so many good qualities as a sadhu, he's not a devotee at all in the proper sense. So his association would not be helpful for us to develop pure devotional service to Krishna. So that's an example that shows that even if someone is a devotee, they may be very saintly in many ways, but if you don't get the right understanding of who Krishna is and how to approach him, then we're not going to be able to properly approach him. So sadhu sangha is essential. And also essential is to follow the basic processes of Krishna consciousness that Srila Prabhupada always stressed, chanting 16 rounds a day, which may seem, well, that's a very ordinary thing. It's not ordinary. It's not that everyone chants 16 rounds of the Hare Krishna mantra a day. You may think, well, I don't have to chant, or don't have to take it very seriously. Maya attacks in various ways. Often we see devotees after many years in the movement, they start to think, well, I don't have to chant 16 a day. Or we may think, I don't have to rise early in the morning, attend kirtan. We become slack in our spiritual practices, and then we are washed away by Maya. To remain strong in our spiritual practices, it's also important to keep good association. What is the meaning of good association? Well, one meaning, as I said, is to those devotees who have a clear understanding of what is Krishna consciousness. What are we here for? What is that clear understanding? It's a clear understanding, and then 200 people may give all their different 200 clear understandings. In essence, Atendriya Priti Vancha Tare Bale Kam Krishnendriya Priti Icha Dhare Premana. The desire to satisfy our own senses is called kama, material desire, lust. The desire to satisfy Krishna's senses is prema. So we should always aim to satisfy Krishna. This is the essence. And that translates in practical life, in what we are doing at every moment as anukul yasya sankalpa pratikul yasya varjana. To only do, to be committed to only doing that which is favorable for advancing in Krishna consciousness, and to reject all of that which will impede our advancement in Krishna consciousness. So these go together very closely. If we don't have good association, means to have a good proper understanding of what is Krishna consciousness, and also to act in Krishna consciousness. To of course, there are many aspects of Krishna consciousness and many things to be done, but this basic commitment to rise early, chant the holy names, take Krishna prasadam only, to not pollute our consciousness with stupid diversions such as going to movies, watching useless things on TV, which means everything on TV. So, theoretical and practical, and clear understanding of what it means to be Krishna conscious, and acting on that. So Vidur is preaching to Dhritarashtra, who has wasted his whole life being the king, being a useless king, more of a burden to his citizens than a help. Not that he was deliberately inimical to his citizens, but Dhritarashtra, the difference between Dhritarashtra and Duryodhana on one side and Yudhishthira on the other, is that Dhritarashtra had his own desires to fulfill by being the king, whereas Yudhishthira, he wanted to be the king simply to perform dharma to satisfy Krishna. So that is the difference. Dhritarashtra was also superficially committed to dharma, but he had so many personal desires to fulfill. Therefore, he couldn't benefit either himself or the citizens. And that's true of everyone, not only Dhritarashtra. As long as we have, or to the extent that we have, personal desires to fulfill, desires other than to satisfy Krishna, we cannot act in a manner beneficial for ourselves, nor for others. So, this Vidura is trying to, at the last moment, just try and turn around Dhritarashtra when he really has nothing left. His family is killed. By his foolishness, Dhritarashtra, in supporting Duryodhana, he himself has been the cause of the disaster for his family. And he's still foolishly clinging to the position of thinking himself the king, whereas he's just maintained in his old age. Old age is also a warning to us, in that for someone who is respected, then he becomes gradually useless. Someone is respected because they're physically powerful or they're very prominent in society, but as they become older, then they become unable to function. And then they just have to be looked after like children again, practically. So that's very humiliating or distressful to someone who's been used to being in charge. I'm doing everything here. Just like I in Bhakti Godhead, one of my godbrothers wrote an article, this was many years ago, he wrote an article saying how his father, as his father grew old, his father became very distressed because he used to be so big and strong and he was very commanding and in charge of the family and in charge of his company. And then when he couldn't even walk without someone to help him, he felt, all he could do was lie on the bed most of the day, and he was no longer in charge. He felt so that he needed someone to help him, whereas always he was the one who helped others. He felt so depressed by all of this. So, happiness turns to distress. The happiness of being the controller turns to the distress of being a helpless invalid. Time smashes our pride. One who is fortunate enough to hear this description of old age spoken by Vidura to Dhritarashtra, they may take note of this to become fully Krishna conscious and utilize old age not for, as most people in old age, they just sit in front of the TV and that's it, and they just wither away, having their consciousness filled with all kinds of disgusting impressions, and they die. What kind of birth do they get after they spend the last 10 years of their life watching TV? And what kind of birth they're going to get is unimaginable. But a devotee takes old age as the sign to become completely detached from this material world and to intensely hear and chant about Krishna. And in this way prepare for going back to Godhead, back to Krishna. Hare Krishna. I won't say more now unless there are any other questions about this. No questions? Yeah. People who are offensive to Prabhupada's movement.
Many people keep telling us that they are growing so much. They are so hungry, they are so constantly growing, so many and then.
Yeah, I was just using that as an example of how people reading the same book, Srila Prabhupada's books, they may have different understandings of Prabhupada's teachings according to their association. So certain people are doing much preaching, spreading, having many followers. But it has to be seen if their understanding is correct. Most people who come to Krishna consciousness, they don't come in a very intelligent manner, from what I can see. Which is not surprising, because in Kali Yuga people are not very intelligent. In the modern age it's considered intelligent to be a software engineer. But that's not very intelligent. I mean, it means you're just another, just following the crowd, and whatever society said is good for you, you've followed that and accepted that. And is that really the goal of life, to be a software engineer? Is that really fulfilling? Is it actually helpful to human society? Well, it's helpful to human society under the terms that certain people have dictated. But most people come to Krishna consciousness and of course it's understandable in the beginning stages, we don't really understand very much. And we are enjoined to hear from seniors. But it would be more intelligent and more following in the footsteps of Arjuna to try to understand Krishna consciousness rather than just accept it as others explain it to us, just like we may get a Bhakti Shastri degree or whatever. That means that we have some theoretical knowledge, but how much are we actually alert and alive to understanding the principles of Krishna consciousness? I'll just give one example. One of my godbrothers, Purnachandra Goswami, who's now passed away from this world, some of his disciples were in one area of Russia where a devotee in that remote area was appointed as the regional secretary. You had this designation of regional secretary. So he called together a meeting of all the devotees and said that as the regional secretary, you should accept me all as your Shiksha Guru. And Purnachandra Goswami said to me that among all the several hundred devotees present there or whatever, only the very few who are his disciples, they said, well, wait a minute. They questioned that and said, you can't just impose yourself as a Shiksha Guru. We have to accept. We have to want you to be our Shiksha Guru. You can't just say, I am your Shiksha Guru. So they were able to say that because they'd been trained by him to understand the philosophy of Krishna consciousness in an intelligent manner which could be actually beneficial to them. Otherwise, as Karl Marx noted, religion is often a means to exploit and manipulate people. So that can be done with, you take Prabhupada's statements that one should follow authorities, and that one should follow authorities is practically predictably being, it's much misusable and has often been misused. That's practically inevitable in a religious institution. But one who is intelligent enough won't be misled by people who claim to have divine dispensation for everything they say and do just because they happen to have some or have been appointed to some position of authority. That doesn't mean we reject authority out and out. The general directive is to respect and follow authority, but not blindly. Blind following is problematic. So, yeah, this group may be expanding. There's a group over the road, just over there. They're expanding also. But whatever little I know about them, I thought that if, I was just saying that when we came in, if someone actually sat down and tried to dream up the most bogus philosophy possible, they'd probably come up with something like that. It's just so amazingly bogus, and it just shows that if you have enough chutzpah, that's a, sahas, I guess you'd say it's a similarly close enough word, sahasam, or just brashness. You can propagate anything and you'll get some followers. Now, I could have become God years ago. I could still become God today. Theoretically, I could go around and say, I'm God. And, you know, if you promote it enough, someone will believe you. There's just some completely insignificant life insurance corporation officer from Tamil Nadu who now many thousands of people believe that he's God. Nowadays he calls himself Kalki Avatar. He was more popular about 10 years ago, but then he became less popular when the police were after him for being after some women or something like that. But many people believe. So, just that someone's increasing doesn't necessarily mean that they're right. We have to see what their philosophy is. We shouldn't be so blind and stupid as to think that anyone who's dressed as a sadhu is a sadhu. In fact, in Kali Yuga, we should be especially careful of people dressed as sadhus. The atheists are right in that regard. But they're wrong in saying that because most of the people dressed as sadhus are not sadhus, that there are no real sadhus and there's no actuality to religion. They take it to the extreme. Then, any other questions?
Question from the Ramakrishna from Bangalore. Devotee sincerely wants to follow Srila Prabhupada, but ends up following those deviate from Srila Prabhupada's teachings. What is that like?
Those who sincerely want to follow Srila Prabhupada, but end up, what is it? Following those who deviate. What is their fate? Well, if they're really sincere, then they should get the opportunity to come to the right thing. Ultimately, Krishna's in everyone's heart. So he directs us to what we want. They may have to suffer due to getting bad association. Then, anything else?